So it's like this. It is Smack-Off season. Phone lines are lit. I love it. And we are going to begin the interview portion of the program. But there will be plenty of time on the back end for your telephone calls, so hang in there. 1-800-636-8686. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, you know that Rocket can. Having a good old time here. NBA postseason has been really interesting. Really interesting of late. Joining us now to talk about that is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. It goes without saying he is a good friend of the program, too. He is Sam Amick. My man, Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, good morning, my friend. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Sam, listen, you have covered sports for a long, long time. You know that one of the things that athletes hate talking about is injuries. So I am not going to start the conversation by asking you about the fact that you are playing through pain right now. I will double back and get to it later on. Let me start with the Clippers. Sure. They've won two straight. They are headed back to Salt Lake. How have the Clippers looked to you in tying up this series, Sam?
Wonderful and confusing all at once. I actually spent part of my morning, you know, having those kinds of conversations about that team and just the roller coaster ride they've been on. You know, they didn't show this kind of play and spirit for a lot of the regular season, and so you don't know what you think of them. And then they, you know, they get down 2-0 to Dallas, and you think they're cooked, and this whole thing's going to fall apart. They show that grit. They fight back. They win that series, and then lo and behold, you're down 2-0 again. But I mean, in the here and the now, they've obviously appeared to have found something. You know, they're starting the game smaller, and Ty Lue and their staff has obviously, from an adjustment standpoint, righted some of the stuff that was tripping them up in the first couple of games. And just in terms of the competitiveness and the way they go out there and do their thing, I thought last night was extremely impressive. You know, Donovan Mitchell having a combined 4 points in the last two first quarters, I think has been huge because it's setting a tone where the Clippers are getting out front, you know, and there's a dominant feeling to it, and they're able to sustain that and even this thing up.
Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. So, Sam, like, does that mean the Clippers have, in fact, figured it all out, or do you still not trust them, and is it still a game-to-game thing with that team?
I mean, I'll probably be a game-to-game thing attitude guy up until they start getting at least closer to reaching expectations. You know, when this team first was constructed, as you know, nobody was sitting here going, gosh, it'd be nice if they got to the second round. You know, this is a championship approach with two guys in Kawhi and Paul George that, you know, we're supposed to get them there. And they've obviously tinkered around the margins quite a bit, moved some characters in and out. I mean, even last night, it's kind of wild to see, you know, Rajon Rondo in street clothes. You know, I think he was dealing with a knee, but still not playing a prominent part. You know, that's a guy that a few months ago, they thought that was going to be an X factor, that he could set the table for some of the other guys that are wonderful scorers, but not the playmakers that he is. And that plan hasn't worked, but, you know, now Reggie Jackson's out there playing, you know, the best ball of his life. So it's just they have so much uncertainty with the role players that it's hard to sit there and say, oh, this is who they are, this is what they are, because of that variance.
We're talking to Sam Amick. You know, Sam, the thing is, obviously, as you know, that not every 2-2 series is the same, right? So if you're Utah and you're heading back playing without Mike Conley Jr., are you pleased to be tied 2-2 heading back to Salt Lake City? What do you think the vibe is like there and the mindset for them?
Probably not, because I get the idea that, all right, we took care of home floor and we're still even. The thing that I think in general has got them, I'm kind of, you know, speculating, but down in the dumps a bit at the moment is that, you know, who knows if I'm wrong, but I don't get the sense that Mike Conley's, like, I think it's a fairly serious hamstring strain. And not having Mike, as we've seen the last two games, is a major factor. And I feel like Donovan, you know, in the wake of him missing so much time with that ankle injury going into the playoffs, missing game one against Memphis, you know, he had like a superhero quality to him for darn near six games when they went 6-0 with him once he got back. But you're starting, I think, to see some of the fatigue. The playoffs is a long haul, and he's not out there doing it by himself, but, you know, he's not getting the kind of help that they wanted to give him when Mike Conley was part of the program. And add on to that the fact that the ankle has been an issue, you know, here and there during these games, that would worry me. If I was the Jazz, and with the momentum the Clippers have, and at least with their core, having seemingly figured out what they need to do, I think they're in a tough spot. And I didn't think that a few days ago, but right now, it just wouldn't shock me at all to see the Clippers finish this thing off like they did the last series.
Sam Amick is joining us. You know, Sam, I'm not going to take anything away from anybody who does survive this war of attrition and finish it off and win. But when I think back on this postseason, I think in ensuing years, I'm going to think about it being a postseason of guys in street clothes. You talk, for instance, 100%. About Brooklyn, right? Reports this morning indicate that James Harden is going to test out his hamstring before tonight's game. Like, he was out, he was upgraded to doubtful. Where do you think that stands? I mean, does that seem realistic to you that he could give it a go? And if so, how effective do you think he could be?
I would be incredibly wary. I mean, okay, he might get out there. But we've seen before. First of all, that's the injury that had him on the shelf for so much time before the playoffs. And like people have pointed out, you know, we kind of got tricked into thinking that, well, the Nets, even though they had all these injury things all throughout the regular season, they were finally getting right at the first, at the right time, and then they were going to be on their way. Well, there's kind of a kinetic energy component to their whole roster where they're all dealing with stuff, and they can get back on the floor for a couple days, couple weeks, but then something else pops up. And with James, and any person like a Mike Conley who's dealing with a hamstring, even though you look out on the floor and you see them, you don't know what version of them it is, and how susceptible they are to re-injury, how slow they are from a defensive standpoint, which the Nets have improved a lot on that end of the floor in the playoffs. So even if he's out there, I think, it's the kind of thing where I'd be smelling blood on the other side, and we'll see if that happens, how he looks.
Sam Amick is joining us. Sam, what about this? Like, for instance, if he can't go and if Kyrie can't go, obviously they're a very, very different team and they're not nearly the threat they might be. But then in Kevin Durant, right. I mean, if it were the start of a series and you're asking Kevin Durant to take on Milwaukee and win four times, that's not happening. But you know that he's a transcendent player, one of the best to ever do it, arguably maybe nobody better scoring the basketball. Guys like that can win a game. Guys like that can maybe even win two games. Does Durant have that in him to go superhero and maybe somehow get them through this round if he doesn't have the other two?
I think he does, and I'm not trying to go down the conspiracy theory road, but he's going to need a little help from the guys with the whistle. It's going to come down to what kind of defense is PJ Tucker allowed to play against him. You already saw after the last game Steve Nash doing that age-old coaching tactic of talking points in the media about the officiating and saying that some of the stuff PJ Tucker was doing wasn't even basketball. And, that's obviously intended to get the attention of the league and set the tone for the next game. So if PJ is, unable to do his thing and rough Kevin up the way he did and really kind of has the last couple games, then Kevin's going to destroy you. And yes, maybe he can do his thing by himself until he gets some help. But it's crazy. So many of these series, Jim, have just completely flipped. I mean, we are ready to start talking about Mike Budenholzer being in trouble and having a coaching change in Milwaukee, and now they're on the other side of this thing. And I don't want to bet against Kevin, but if he doesn't get help at some point, I think it's going to be hard.
I think you're right. Sam Amick is joining us. All right, Sam, so let me double back. At the end of May, you and your family went to Hawaii. Now, this was a trip that had been planned back when it seemed like the NBA season was not going to start until January. But because you were all vaccinated and school was over, you decided to go ahead with it. What was the initial plan for the trip?
Good old-fashioned week in Oahu. We like to go up to the Ko'olina area on the west shore. And so just, snorkeling, hiking, all of the above. And because the playoffs were going on, it was going to be mixed with me, using the iPad to keep track of things and working a little bit, but not too much. But yeah, the plan did not exactly go as planned.
No, so it's a great idea, right? Good quality family time. You get outside, you go somewhere beautiful, you have your iPad, you stay plugged in. You and the family go for a hike in southeast Oahu. What happened?
So the Manawili Falls Trail, highly recommended, beautiful. We did get to the waterfall, which was incredible. On the way back, I'd say in totality, like hour and 45-ish in terms of the whole hike. And we're about 15 minutes from the trailhead, and I step on a tree root that had grown above the ground. And I have the kind of ankle sprain that I've had dozens of times in my old pickup basketball career. And so that, I mean, it was a bad sprain. It certainly, the pain was at a high level. But initially I'm thinking, all right, I've been through this a million times before. The part where it got a little scary, a little dicey, was I then proceeded to get extremely nauseous very quickly and dizzy. Thankfully, I sat down rather than forging ahead on the dicey hiking trail. But I sit down, and then it's like the movies where all of a sudden the lights go out. I'd never passed out or blacked out in my whole life. So it was a lot. I mean, I was out for like 1 to 2 minutes. I wake up, and the family's pretty spooked because they thought it was something more serious. And the short version of the story, Jim, is you know how this ends. I wake up, and now the balls are already in motion when it comes to the medical response. The family's called 911. They inform me that we got a bird coming. We got a helicopter on the way. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, guys, what are we doing here? Like, it's a sprained ankle. And I literally called 911 back to kind of, you know, plead my case and say, let me just hobble out of here and learn the hard way that they don't mess around out there. If you get hurt on their public hiking trail and they're worried about you, and they were worried mainly about the blacking out part, then they come pluck you out. So they gave me the Ethan Hunt Mission Impossible experience. They put me on a big cable and literally pulled me and dangled me out of the forest for like 3 miles.
It's absolutely insane. Like, and also to that point, Sam, normally you keep it PG-13, but when you got hurt, your 14-year-old son said things got a little bit blue and that you were saying things that included the F and the B and the sh, but mostly the F's. And, you know, as a father, like I can remember when I was a kid growing up, when my dad let go with an F-bomb, I never forgot that. That made a real impression upon me. So, I mean, again, just so we're clear on this, when you came to and your wife and kids called 911 and you were airlifted out of there like Ethan Hunt, man, what was that like?
It was insane. I'm pretty shameless, Jim, but I wasn't shameless enough. I was tempted to take a video on my cell phone of the flight. But you got to imagine, I'm literally sitting there strapped into like a canvas diaper, for lack of a better way of putting it. My youngest son now likes to call me Captain Underpants. He thinks it's hilarious because of the setup that they put me in for the chopper. And the medic or the EMT guy who was helping in kind of my escort on this thing, you know, obviously a total stranger. He's now got his legs spread and we're kind of like in the weirdest, uncomfortable position possible, you know, in this getup, and they pull me up, and I am thinking to myself, like, okay, where's the pulley system to where they put me in the helicopter? And it's like, oh, no, they're just literally going to hang you probably 300 feet above the earth. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, this would be unfortunate if I plummeted to my death because of a turned ankle. Thankfully, that didn't happen. They then flew, I don't know the distance, this is about 3-4 minutes, and they flew to a nearby park. And the worst, most embarrassing part was that I was hoping it would be an empty park where I could limp away in solitude. And lo and behold, we get to this park and there's a blacktop naturally. And there's like a full run of pickup basketball. And these guys stop their game and just basically look up into the sky. And it's like, you know, who's this pansy that's getting dropped in the park? It was a lot, brother.
God, that's insane, Sam. That is so much. So really quickly, like you said, in your local runs back in the day, you know you've had sprained ankles, but you like how severe this can be. Does this mean, like, when you look at LeBron and Donovan Mitchell and what they've dealt with in terms of ankle injuries this season, do we not then underplay the severity of ankle injuries too much and not give them the respect they deserve?
Yeah, I think so for sure. It really has. I mean, I knew, you know, I've had them before, but this one was different in that regard. Like Donovan Mitchell in particular, I find myself watching him really closely now because, I mean, again, I know it's apples to oranges to compare something like this to that, but an ankle is an ankle. And as we speak, you know, I'm 9 days out, I think 9 or 10 days out from the injury. I ditched the crutches 2 days ago and I'm getting there. But as you called, I'm in Manhattan Beach and I was trying to make my way down this road to go check out the beautiful scenery. And I mean, I'm moving incredibly slowly. And so it's that thing where, yeah, Donovan came back, but only he, I mean, how many times does the media ask him about the ankle? And obviously he shuts it down, doesn't want to talk about it, but you know, it's more tender than he lets on. And LeBron was very similar. Like, I think if he had a healthy ankle, maybe they survive against Phoenix. I think it was that big of a factor. And I mean, so yeah, the answer to your question is we don't truly take it into account. And I mean, those are the wheels. That's the thing that is if you had to pick a body part, you know, it's hands and feet for these guys is how they get the job done.
And now Kyrie as well. He is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Sam, I'm very happy that, well, that wasn't your time. It's never up to any of us to decide when it's our time. Thank goodness that was not your time. Your family has a story. Your son can talk a little junk. It's all going to be good and come back. I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad that you're all right, man.
Thank you, Romy. I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you too, Sam. Great job. Thanks for sharing that. That's tough, man. That's scary. Really scary. Senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Like, we've all, even on a hike, right? And I take hikes, and I love to hike. But you know how that is, especially on the back end, or you're fatigued, and you get a little bit lazy, or maybe there's kind of a, you know, a cutback, or a rock. Man, you can see how it happens. And you twist an ankle. You roll an ankle, and it's painful. But ever to the point where you get nauseous, and you pass out, and you have to get airlifted out of there? Man, that is an amazing tale. When we return, I want to talk some baseball. Stephanie Apstein is a senior writer for SI. She is all over the foreign substance on the ball story. That's coming up next. So golf's third major of the year is this weekend. Are you on that? DraftKings is. The leader in one-day fantasy sports is giving you a shot to land in the green with over $7 million in total prizes for the taking. So easy to play. What you do is you pick six golfers. You stay under the salary cap. You submit your lineup before the tournament tees off early Thursday morning. Then you sit back and you follow the action. The more red numbers they have on the leaderboard, the closer you are to winning some green. Rack up points for pars, birdies, finishing position, and more. Even though you may not be able to hit the course with the pros, DraftKings is giving you the opportunity to scratch your competitive itch and reign supreme. So download the DraftKings app. Use code Rome during signup this week. DraftKings is putting you in the action with a shot at over $7 million in total prizes. Once again, use that code Rome, R-O-M-E, and get a shot at over $7 million in total prizes. Only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions do apply. You want to see DraftKings.com for details. DraftKings.com for details. Code name Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome, live in Southern California. All right, we've been talking about this topic. I gave you my thoughts on it earlier. Joining us now to break down even further is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Stephanie Apstein is my guest. Stephanie, nice to have you on. How are you?
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. I'm great. So you've been all over the issue of pitch doctoring, and earlier this month, you co-authored a piece for SI's Daily Cover with the headline, "This should be the biggest scandal in sports, the inside story of how rampant pitch doctoring in MLB is, pumping pitchers up and deflating offenses," end of quote. So when did you first start working on this topic, and what tipped you off?
We actually started working on this several months ago, either January or February. So we've run two stories on the topic so far, the one you mentioned and then one about an Angels clubhouse attendant who was fired for providing sticky stuff to pitchers across the league. And so we started working on the second one first. We reached out to him several months ago. And then as we were reporting that, it became clear that this was really two stories, and they were much bigger than we had understood at first. And so that's kind of when we started to get a sense. Everyone we talked to was saying kind of the same thing, which was, this is a huge problem.
All right, so I'm going to try and get back to that clubhouse attendant in a moment. But as you write, pitchers go into the training room before games, quote, to swipe tongue depressors, which they use to apply their sticky stuff to wherever they choose to hide it, then return afterward to grab rubbing alcohol to dissolve the residue. Like, what kind of sticky stuff are they using, and then where are they hiding it?
This is serious, like glue-like stuff. The big one is called Spider Tack, the stickiest one, and that was actually developed for World's Strongest Man competitors who are trying to lift those gigantic Atlas stones. It is extremely sticky. Like, you could put it on your hand and touch a cinder block, and you could lift a cinder block with just the palm of your hand. That's how sticky. And then they are mostly putting it, everybody's got a different spot, and so that's one thing that a lot of teams start to do, is they try to get scouting reports on where the guy keeps it. But it's the most common one is on the inside of their glove, A lot of them manage to keep some of it on their hats. Some guys have it on the inside of their belt buckle. So if you see them kind of adjusting the tuck on their jersey a lot, sometimes they're going to sticky stuff. There are some guys who have it on shoelaces. Some guys, if they have dark socks, will keep it on their socks. It's really, they can find almost anywhere to put it. I heard unconfirmed reports of one guy who keeps it in his mouth, which sounds just foul to me.
That sounds foul to me as well. Stephanie Abstein joining us. That story about the cinder block is unbelievable, but there's so many unbelievable stories. For instance, one National League reliever said that he uses Pelican Grip Dip and was pulled aside by airport security. Quote, yeah. They swabbed my fingers, and this is after showering and everything, and they're like, hey, you have explosives on your fingers. I'm like, well, I don't, but I'm sure that I've got something that's not organic on there, end of quote. That to me is insane. Like, what was your reaction as you were working on the story? Were you ever stunned, or did this all kind of make sense to you?
No, that was the one that caught me the most off guard. I actually had that conversation fairly late at night, and so I was hoping... My plan had been to go to bed after conducting that interview, and I was so taken aback by it that I just stayed up and wrote it because I couldn't fall asleep. I couldn't stop thinking about this guy getting stopped at airport security. I mean, this is some sticky stuff.
Really sticky stuff. So another recently retired pitcher said that, quote, 80 to 90% of pitchers are using some level of grip enhancement. I mean, does that number sound right to you? And if so, how did this become so widespread?
Yeah, I think that seems about right. That about reflects what we heard from other people. I think it's important to differentiate between the levels of grip enhancement. There's the spider tack that we were just talking about, and that really is a performance-enhancing substance. But there are also guys who are using just a little bit of, you know, if you spray your arm in sunscreen and then you mix it with the rosin that they give you, you can make a sticky substance that way. And that makes you a better pitcher because it helps you get a grip on the ball. It helps enhance your command, but it doesn't make the ball spin in a way that hitters have never seen before. So I think that of the 80 to 90%, probably a bigger portion of that group is using the lower grade sticky stuff. And it's more of a minority using the really sticky stuff, but it's a healthy minority. I think, part of why it's gotten so bad recently is the pitchers have always been using something, but they never really knew exactly how well it was working. They were mostly guessing. In the last couple of years, we've had really good technology that has become available to players on an individual level where they can apply something to the baseball and then go throw and watch the TrackMan numbers. And they can tell right away, that gave me an extra 200 RPMs on my spin rate fastball. This is working. Or that didn't really do that much. Let me try something else and see if I can have more of an effect. And so that level of technology has made them into real scientists about this, I think. And that is where they've basically maximized the efficiency of this. And that's why it's become such a problem.
Stephanie Abstein is joining us. I was going to say to you, like, MLB has not done anything about this at all until the last few days. So why have they essentially been looking the other way? And now is that pendulum, or why is that swinging back?
Because as I said, it got a lot worse over the last 2 or 3 years. I think they've been kind of caught off guard. Like, everyone has known the pitchers were mixing sunscreen and rosin or hiding pine tar on their gloves. And that, everybody felt, was not that big a deal. You want them to have some kind of a grip. The baseballs are very inconsistent and they're pretty slick, and you'd like them to know where the pitch is going. But over the past few years, I think the league started hearing from team officials saying, this is a big problem. And I think they also started to realize that it's not just sort of a problem in general. It could actually be contributing to the existential question the sport is facing, which is how boring it can be to watch. There's very little offense. And part of the reason there's very little offense is that the pitching is too good. And part of the reason the pitching is too good is that they're using these sticky substances. And so the hope by the league is that if you can crack down on the substances, you might not have to move the mound back or make the bases bigger or do any of these other things that they've been talking about, because they really want to increase offense. They want fans to be more interested. And maybe just enforcing a rule that's on the books will get them there.
Yeah, see, that's my thing. I think that's where it's at. Like, if you were to say to me, why now? I think for that very reason, because they've got a collective batting average around the league of .236. That's not good for business. Now, as you point out in the piece, umpires rely on managers to ask for an inspection of the opposing pitcher, but managers don't want to do that because they know their guys are cheating too. So where does that leave everybody?
Where we are right now, I would say. So the league just actually issued a memo today saying umpires are going to be doing this on their own. They do not need They don't need the managers to ask for it. They are empowered to make these checks on their own. And I think that is a big reason, because nobody, as we've seen, nobody wants to say anything, because not only are your pitchers doing it, but you might want to acquire that pitcher at some point, the pitcher that you're calling out. And so you can't really, you want to maintain good relationships with people around the league. So there's just, it's been a no-win situation so far. And so they really need to, and, you know, it's not an easy job to ask the umpires to be the ones going out there and doing it. But the league is trying to make the point that the league will stand behind them when they do this.
So a couple of quick thoughts, and I could do this all day long. This is really fascinating. But what do you suppose, Stephanie, happens to the pitchers who have been really effective with the sticky stuff and the ability to get really high spin rates? Are they in danger of getting knocked around without the sticky stuff?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of options here. One is, the two ways to control a baseball when you're throwing it really hard are to use sticky stuff or to take something off it and throw a little bit less hard and try to command it. And so some of them, I think, will probably do that. And so you'll see velocity go down a little bit. And some of them will just throw it that hard and not really know where it's going. So I don't know that that will necessarily mean more hit batters, but I do think it might mean more walks. And that might change the personnel we see a little bit. Because, you know, some of these stars are going to be good anyway. But a lot of where we've seen a change is the marginal guys, the guys around the edges who suddenly are unhittable. And if they can't use sticky stuff, then they may start calling up. Teams may not go to the guy who can throw 100 but doesn't know where it's going. They might start calling up a guy who can command the baseball a little bit better without help. And so you might see a different looking pitching core across the league.
Right. So finally, quickly, the other piece that you mentioned was, you wrote about Bubba Harkins, who was a clubhouse attendant for the Angels. He was fired last April after 39 years with the team. What was the explanation given for his dismissal?
They said to him, you know, an investigation has concluded that you have been distributing sticky stuff across the league, and so you are fired. And he said, yeah, I have been distributing sticky stuff, but everybody was doing it, and so I thought that was okay.
So if it's as widespread as everybody says, why is this guy the only guy who's been punished?
We didn't really get a good answer to that question, I would say. We'll see if that changes over the next couple of weeks as they start enforcing. But yeah, at the moment, the only guy who's really been punished for this is a clubhouse attendant.
She is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated all over this story. Stephanie Apstein, my guest. Stephanie, great job. Thank you so much. Nice to visit with you.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you for doing that. Really interesting. All right, take a short time out. And as you know, you can react to anything you just heard. We went back to back with two really good interviews. And when we come back, why don't we talk smack off? Got some player profiles for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Next generation of paint protection is officially here. New 303 Graphene Nano Spray Coating will provide up to 12 months of professional level protection. Insane water beading, jaw-dropping shine, one simple application. Visit 303radio.com for more information. It is that time. 10 days, 8 shows. Man, I can't lie, I'm starting to feel that. Even I'm starting to kind of yip up a little bit on that, like we're running out of time. You got to have a sense of urgency now. Not to the point where I'm going to walk to the back of the studio and start throwing up, but we're running out of time. 10 days, 8 shows. That is all that stands between now and Smack Off 27. And since we're so pressed for time, let me triple up right now on player profiles. So far, you have met a chunk of the field, but I still have 7 heavy hitters. I still have an entire golden ticket class to run down before next Friday. Let's get rolling. A triple set of profiles today, starting with Salty Cerati in Providence. Now, Cerati has been a mainstay on the show for a long time now. predominantly as an emailer who once dominated the ATP before switching up her brand to openly thirsting for the regal gentleman of the NFL. I'm talking about real men. Kurt Warner, Jack Del Rio, Tom Brady, all man, to name a few. It's her lane. She owns it. It's what she's known for. However, she has also picked up the blower on numerous occasions and thrown around some smack with a trademark, instantly recognizable voice that lets you know exactly who she is and where she's from.
Well, today is Kurt Warner's birthday. Happy birthday, handsome. Now, moving on from sunny beaches to sons of bitches. Hey, Dr. Dave, are you listening? You know, it's so funny you're a doctor because we have to be nursed back to health after one of your calls. I unwittingly became one of his patients when he blocked me on Twitter this week. By doing so, he technically inoculated me from his baggery, so I guess I'm a patient now. Dave, you need to put a sign out in your waiting room that says, the doctor is incompetent. And by the way, why do doctors always have to let everybody know they're doctors? Hell, if we all went along with that, we'd have to call Cal in Vegas, Dishwasher Cal. Oh, by the way, Cal, don't you have any friends? You know, Matt and Van and Mike and Little Rock don't count. They thought they were going to Vegas to meet up with gals. In the jungle pecking order, I am still head hen. I am out.
That was 2017, and you heard her say it. In the jungle pecking order, she is still head hen. Hard to argue when 3 years later, she did rip a golden ticket on this call right here.
Hey, so guess what, buddy? Bobby Brady called. He wants his school monitor armband back. Anyway, Jim, this pandemic is so weird, man. I went to the market yesterday. I felt like I was in Warsaw in 1943. I mean, the meat case had three things in it. A block of orange cheese, a giant roll of bologna, and a dead fish with giant bulgy eyes. Ugh, disgusting. But I'd like to give credit where credit is due. Let's shout out to all the clones who are in the medical field. Yay! And when I think of clones in the medical field, I think of one Dr. Dave in Chicago. You know that every day he's right there in the front lines of every curbside takeout restaurant in Illinois. Dave, I'd like to thank you for keeping everybody safe. From your takes, Jim, today is Tom Brady's senior's birthday. I mean, can you imagine siring Tom Brady? God bless you, Mr. Brady. Your sperm is mighty. You know what? Speaking of Tom Brady, Jim, I'd do things to him that you wouldn't do to a barnyard animal.
I'm telling you, I don't know if it's the voice or the thirsty bit or the set him up and knock him down one-liners, but I really like Sarah T. And that call did earn her a ticket to last year's Smack-Off. The thing about last year's Smack-Off is it did not go the way that she wanted it to. It did not go the way that I wanted it to. And I would love to see Sarah try it again. I would just suggest to her and everybody else, be careful. Don't put me in a position and the rest of the XR4TI where we have to interpret kind of a sketchy, ambiguous joke live on the air with no net and no context as to why you're doing it. Like, if you put me in that position, I'm going to err on the side of caution. I got to be responsible here. Anyway, Sarah, I listened to that. I am reminded of how funny you are, how good you are. If you want to run it back in 10 days, let me know. You are welcome, and we would love to have you back, Sarah. Then you've got Dan in Denver. Dan has been in a couple of these things. He had a really impressive finish at Smack-Off 25.
Jim, like the Kaplan Asian hosting a show during the daylight, I'm just happy to be here. Bro, you're the whitest thing in the jungle since Bodhi's rapping. And bro, I'm glad to see Chael Perfection Sonnen finally decided to call it quits. Chael, your fight name was Perfection. I'm struggling to see what's perfect about you. Your fighting career, 17 losses. Your Smack-Off career, embarrassed in the last two Smack-Offs. Your body, hell no. Dude, Bellator actually demanded you fight with a shirt on if you fight again. Chael fighting without PEDs is like Leffen Laguna calling today without a gimmick. No shot to win. But Romy, who the hell chose the Bucks as Milwaukee's mascot? I love how their motto is Fear the Deer. What are you going to do? Jump out in front of my vehicle and then stop and stare at my headlights waiting for me to hit you. Brad and Corona, if only your smack last year hit as hard as your nipples were in that photo. Did you rub ice on those things pre-photo, or did they perk up around the end of your call when Vic started shouting your name?
This dude. Now, I haven't heard from this dude in a year, but he did call in last week, and he did let me know that he would be there next Friday, which is good for the jungle, bad for the XR4TI.
Hey, I caught the show the other day when you were openly petitioning to find Keith Arnold's replacement. I noticed you said no previous experience required. Boy, that's got to make you feel important, Keith. Keith, you went to Notre Dame and still ended up with a job that didn't require experience. What was this, an internship, a senior project? Are you getting class credits for this stint? Are you leaving for good or just headed home for the summer semester? In Rome, if Alvy's the brains of the XR4TI, Keith Arnold was the tonsil. We can all see him, but we're not really sure what he does or why he's there. And Keith, I heard you played baseball at Notre Dame in 98. Well, played isn't really the right word, seeing as you had one appearance. One appearance for one inning. What'd you do throughout the ceremonial first pitch? Were you the guy in charge of warming up the right fielder in between innings? Did you shag foul balls and return them to the snack shack?
Damn. Keith took some on his way out the door, didn't he? Not to jam a Mike in Indy clip in the middle of a Dan in Denver profile, but this Mike in Indy soundbite got cut for time this past Friday. And since we're on the subject of Keith, why the hell not just double back and double down and play it anyway?
Rome doesn't exactly have a crew of ass kickers on the other side of that glass. You got Hawk, who threw out his back putting on his shoes. Alvy would just hit the dude, no soundbite, while Keith Arnold takes a hands-off approach, just like he does every day at work. This guy works like he's got a guaranteed contract. I haven't seen him do a damn thing since he showed up.
So back to Dan in Denver. I love a guy who's not afraid to go big game hunting, because besides tattooing Keith, he also took a really good run at the five-time champ, Shawnee.
Look no further than the Cablin Asian. He parlayed this thing into his own weekly show. Shawnee hosts a show once a week that no one listens to. Who are you, the Woodscopes? Sean, you and I both get on CBS Airwaves a couple minutes a week. We're paid about the same, too. And I like how Sean showed up with Carbone last year, wearing a Letterman jacket from 2 decades ago, beer guts spilling out the front so it doesn't zip anymore. 10 years between calls. Bro, this isn't a high school reunion. You all but rented a Ferrari for the night. People didn't even recognize you. They just whispered, that's the guy who used to be really good at calling a radio show.
Dan in Denver going off at 13-1 on Stucknut. Could be some value there for a guy making just his third appearance at the main event. Finally, let's wrap this thing up. Matt in Vancouver, you know the deal with the belligerent Nuck. He is one of the two most famous reps from Canada. I want him to do as well, as badly as he wants himself to do well. I'm not biased. I just want to prove that Canada can hang. And I know for a fact that Matt in Van can hang. You don't believe me? Just ask. Well, you guessed it, Keith Arnold.
Good luck to Keith, man. He's following in a long line of former crew members moving on to smaller and worse things. Will he end up like Kyle Brandt, oozing fake manufactured enthusiasm for some preseason NFL game? Will he end up like Jay Stew, picking up Rodney Peete's dry cleaning? Will he end up like Dozmati, doing whatever the hell Dozmati's doing? Or maybe he's going to end up like Austin Huff, who actually served me my coffee at Starbucks this morning. Anyway, Keith, good luck with one of the worst decisions of your life.
That was an incredible grenade that took out like 5 people. And it's not the first time that Matt and Van has piled up a long body count in a short period of time.
Smack-off season is upon us. Time to weed out the frauds, my man. Namely, Dan in Denver, who I called out for being a cowardly punk bitch over a month ago. We still haven't heard a peep from him. I rest my case. And nice to see a cute little gif from Leffen Laguna, the Laguna Beach belly. Guess this freak's too busy swapping Q-tip techniques with Andrew Siciliano and Adam Silver to call the show front-running bag. And as for this gas bag, Rick in Buffalo. Rick, you look like an angry, screaming human penis, man. Mix in a baseball cap.
So my man clearly has the regular season chops. We all know this. I've got to see him put it together when it matters most. When it matters most.
I'm taking this Canada Heat personally, Rome. I'm a perpetual road team. I'm outmanned. I'm outgunned. But I wouldn't want it any other damn way. Rick's just the jungle's version of a mall cop. A fat loser who garners no respect at all, but his pepper spray makes him feel like a tough guy. I don't know if this Drizzle guy is good or not, but I do know Drizzle is the stupidest name I've ever heard.
Stucknut, this 40-year-old loser has done nothing but record your content for 20 years and put it on his own website. It's pathetic.
Your boss, Eric Spitz, female viewership has jumped no less than 900%. And hey, Mona, we're going to win you over, baby. You'll be Team Canada soon enough. War Reggie in the OC going full Reese McGuire during his calls. Callan Vegas is a deluded, psychotic, hooker-addicted moron.
Adam Hawk, who is such an insufferable D-bag that everyone not named Alvin has quit for far worse jobs. Mark in Boston, Tony Saragusa pimping man's depends thinks you need to clean your act up. Wartan in Denver using a shaken up soda bottle as a bidet.
And I know you said numerous times Mark in Boston could win a smack off. And man, you're right. If Les, Vic, Mike, Chael, Benny, Tyler, and myself all pass away before the smack off, then Mark in Boston sure as hell has a chance.
Can we get Jeff a liver smoothie and go ahead and send him the hell away again? Damn, man. And his palatial estate in Virginia. I think we know that was about 10 years in a supermax federal penitentiary for sex crimes, Jeff. The only memorable thing Dan has done in the last year is get his ass knocked out by my guy Big Daddy Beak in Studio City with a truck stop hooker bum sex blast. Hey, Rick, everybody is sick of you, and you're uglier than the new bowling ball working for Rome. The only item on our shared calendar, Corona, is Mrs. Corona's scheduled Northern Sando. Kyle, son, I'm Peyton Manning, and you're the trainer, and I'm dropping D's right on your forehead.
War, Canada's comeback. Peace!
That's the heat that I'm looking for on the 25th. From Matt, from Dan, from Sarah T. And while we're on the topic of the smack-off, this is a memo to the entire field who plans to show up on that day. Find a hard line. Find a hard line. Find a phone that plugs into the wall. Find a phone whose only function is to be a phone. Sound quality is so important. You can have the best call in the world, but if we do not understand it or we have to work to decipher it, it's utterly worthless. I'm going to call some people out right now. I'm talking to everybody, but especially Jeff in Southfield, Caleb in Green Bay, Mark in Boston, Cal in Vegas, Matt in Van, Dan in Denver, Tyler in Edmonton, CJ in the Bay, all of you. There's been issues with all of your phone lines. Get a hard line. Get on the best phone possible. Do not call on a cell phone. It's the 5 minutes. 5 minutes of the most important on-air real estate in the game. Do not leave any of this to chance. Do not risk it with crappy cell service. Really important advice. Pay heed. That and the fact that we are now 10 days, 8 shows out. Then it's here. Let's do this damn thing. All right. Smack off 27, $5,000 to the winner. And some valuable real estate on Cruz Pedregon's rig. 1-800-636-8686. Got my guy Bruce Feldman coming up next. Always good to talk to Bruce. One of the best, and we are talking some ball with him. Hour number three straight ahead, and on the other side of that, you've got time. You've got your telephone number. You have your opportunity. You have a shot at glory. Once-in-a-lifetime glory and a stack of cash. Hit me up.